for today is to basically finish up the Choresh topics, not to say everything that can be said about Choresh, but just as far as our basic plan to get through the Charisha topics pretty much today, the Halacha L'maisa ramifications of some of what we will see, we'll follow up with on Sunday, but as far as Sugi itself, time permitting, we'll try to basically wrap up some of the major points today. And essentially, just to really fill in some of what's been about, that essentially, so one issue just to touch upon in terms of the whole question of the issue of the connection between Charisha and Zriya. So one question that emerges is, so what is the story with what's called Charisha Shnia? So if we have a plowing that takes place before the planting, and then we have another plowing after the planting, so it sounds like from our Gemara that that's also an act of Charisha. It sounds like from our Gemara that you're also Chayiv for that. The Gemara is just questioning why Zriya is put before Charisha, and the answer the Gemara gives is that in Eretz Yisrael, that's the way they do things. The ground is still hard, so they do Charisha before and after the Zriya. And the implication that you have is that that's a Chiyuv, and that's called Charisha. And that's how it sounds like from Rashi, it's how it sounds like from the Ritva. That's perhaps the Pashas reading of the Gemara. Hi.
So could you elaborate on the question?
The question is basically, one could have taken the position that a Charisha that happens after Zriya maybe shouldn't be called Charisha. Maybe it should be called something else. Maybe it's not specifically a Malacha. There's a case to be made based on our discussion in Zriya that it could be called Zareya. Right? That if it's necessary to make the seed fully assimilated, maybe that's called Zareya. So it sounds like from the Gemara that it's called Charisha, because the Gemara is explaining the placement of the word Choresh in the Mishnah, and explaining that in Eretz Yisrael they do this afterwards. So apparently that's called Charisha, and that's something that you're chayav for. That's the view that some of the Rishonim, such as Rashi and the Ritva, seem to take. It's a question about the Rambam. The Rambam's not clear, because the Rambam phrases the Malachas, Charisha, Zriya, etc. So the Rambam specifically reverses the order to the way the Gemara would have thought would have made more sense. Any question about that?
Yeah, but then the Menchus Chinuch said clearly for us that the Rambam was saying that he felt that it was real.
So Menchus Chinuch is actually somewhat clear, but somewhat unclear, because he says two different things. He seems to say two different things. And there's one in Zareya and one in Choresh. So, and he seems to go in different directions as far as what he thinks the Rambam understands about this. So there's a little ambiguity about the Rambam, even from the Menchus Chinuch and even without the Menchus Chinuch. And one possibility is that he's assuming like the Gemara here and doesn't need necessarily to spell it out, because since he lists other activities that are like the second Charisha, right, anything that's there to promote growth, anything that's there to promote susceptibility for growth, rather, to promote susceptibility for the seeds, he already includes. So then Charisha Shniya is not a bigger Chiddush than some of the other things. While others read it differently and assume that he wouldn't necessarily call that Choresh. So the truth is, it's a little bit ironic if he wouldn't, because it would seem to work better for him. Because according to the Rambam, if it's a broader category of avodas karka, rather than just softening the land, which you might argue happened to be before, then you should count it. And especially for the Shita L'Haran, as some of the Svarim point out, that the Shita L'Haran, that it doesn't necessarily have to be connected to Zriya at all, it would seem all the more appropriate to count Charisha as Charisha even after the act of Zriya. So that's a little bit of an open question, how exactly to relate to that whole issue, and it's somewhat a function of the sugya. It doesn't have a major nafkamina, it has a little bit of a nafkamina. Presumably it's going to either be Charisha or Zriya, but that's a little bit of a question. It relates also to an issue which you may have seen something about in the Maror Makomos, the question of Afar Tichuach, which is a little bit of a confusing question, because the phrase is used probably in different ways, in different places, that literally we're talking about fine afar, that's ground up, kind of like sand type of quality. So there is a question, which saw the Tosfos on Lamed Tes and the discussion in Beitza. A little bit of a question, is there a possibility of chorish in such a surface? Right? Even though the phrase is used also in Psachim, where it talks about the tsunma, and it talks about the land that's rocky, and that there's no charisha possible by rocky land, it sounds like. But then the Gemara says, well, maybe it is possible because there's softer ground underneath. It's afar tichuach underneath. So apparently there's different gradations of what's considered to be very soft land. So the question is there a prohibition of charishim in HaTorah, or at all, when dealing with land that is A, so finely ground that it doesn't need any more softening? Or also, is there a prohibition, for example, as the Rishonim discuss, of creating a guma, creating a hole, when that hole is not going to last? Because there's no weight, there's no sturdiness to this dirt, so if you make a hole, so the hole is immediately going to collapse within itself. So this is something that the Rishonim talk about and argue whether there's any possibility of a prohibition of guma in that context, and whether there's any choresh in general in such lands. Sammy, you wanted to...
Isn't that the same question? Maybe if you can make guma, then it would be a problem with choresh?
Right. The question is, how, since guma is an aspect of choresh, and here it's not going to either, maybe choresh, broadly speaking, doesn't apply, because Nechrosh Melem, it's already all as plowed as it could get. So maybe there's no such thing as being Chorish land that's so soft. Or we could say that even if there is, but the Guma is not going to have any significance in this land because it's not going to last. It's not going to, you can't, it'll just collapse in of itself. So you see, some of the Rishonim distinguish between land that is very soft and has harder land around it. So even if you make a Guma, you'll still have something to hold it up. And afar that is completely pulverized, so to speak. So this is a question in the Rishonim. We saw different Tosfosim that go back and forth about this. So whatever the conclusion is, it reflects again this consideration. Is Charisha purely something that's about softening the land? And here this is already as soft as it gets. Is it something that's there specifically to prepare it for Zriya? How does that affect this question? And it relates to the question of Charisha Shniya, that here you have land that you plowed once, now you want to plow it again. So what's the story of that second plowing? In the halacha, there's something distinguished. You know, the whole question of, are you chayiv for Charisha Shniya? The discussion about this in a sefer Tal Oros, written by Zev Wolf, sefer in the Malachos. It's quoted by a lot of later svarim. So he suggests that it all makes a difference where you are, kind of like the Gemara suggests. And the Gemara says that our Mishnah is talking about Eretz Yisrael, where there is hard land, and it requires a second Charisha. So maybe that's the story, that if you're somewhere where you need two Charishas, one before and one after, so then that second Charisha is considered to be Charisha. And if it's a question where you're in an area where really the first Charisha is what's necessary in order to get the seeds to take root, and after that it's not really contributing to that per se, so then maybe that's not called Charisha. So it's going to be a very subjective reading of what's called Charisha, depending on what kind of land we're talking about. And again, that's probably consistent with the Gemara, which maybe you could read as explicitly saying that much. Okay, so far so good? Make sense? Okay, so now, just want to briefly discuss the Gemara, which is much more significant than we're going to give it credit for today. Because we'll talk about it more at length after Yontif. As I've mentioned, either publicly or privately, the agenda is, after Yontif, to talk about Malachash and Yitzruch HaMagufa. So Malachash and Yitzruch HaMagufa, part of our advantage of pushing it off till after we talked about Zareya and Choresh, besides when we just get started with specific Malachos, is that it draws heavily on both of these sugyas. So it draws on Zomer Sarach Leitzim, which we saw in the context of Zareya, and it draws on this Gemara about Choresh. So this Gemara is very relevant. And the Gemara tells us that you have somebody who, the Gemara is in the middle of Ein Gimel Beis, Amar V'Yaba, HaChofer Guma B'Shabbos, Ve'Ein Osorach El Ha'Ofra, Patra Alev. So let's say somebody is digging a hole on Shabbos, but he's not interested in the hole, he's interested in the dirt. He needs dirt, so he's digging out the dirt to take it. So he's Potter. The Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. This is Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda. And what's the significance of saying even according to Rabbi Yehuda? Because Rabbi Yehuda normally obligates, normally is mechayiv in a malacha shenitzriach l'gufa. So what does this Gemara say about what is a malacha shenitzriach l'gufa or not? That's something we'll talk about after Yantiv. Just to give you a little bit of context, the most common explanation of a malacha shenitzriach l'gufa is that you're doing a malacha, an act that was in the Mishkan, but you're doing it for a different reason. So when they plowed in the Mishkan, so then they plowed because they wanted to affect the ground. They wanted to do something to the karka. Here, you are digging, which is some aspect, we won't say Avra Tolda yet, but some aspect of Choresh, and you're doing that not because you're interested in the ground, you're doing it because you're interested in the dirt that's going to come out of the ground. So that's a different type of function. So that's consistent with the usual type of interpretation of what we call Malacha Shenitzriach L'gufa. It's important to be aware that many Rishonim have a different understanding of Malacha Shenitzriach L'gufa, and that's part of what we'll get to after Yantiv, that it could be, and there may be more than one other understanding, but it could be that a Malacha Shenitzriach L'gufa is essentially something negative, which very strongly borders on Mekalkel. We see this kind of a continuum here, that you have a normal malacha, a malacha she'nitzricha l'gufa, which is in the middle, we assume is pater, but Rabbi Yehuda and the Rambam assume is chayiv, and Mekalkel, which Gemara is going to say here, that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, is pater. So, malacha she'nitzricha l'gufa is somewhere in the middle, so some of the Rishonim understand that it's basically an avodah siluk, it's you're trying to get rid of something. That normally malacha is about something you want to create, so to speak. And here you want to get rid of something, you want to put something somewhere else, that's a malacha she'nitzricha l'gufa. So you have to figure out, we'll talk about when we talk about that sugya, how exactly this Gemara reflects on that or doesn't reflect on that. But what the Gemara here says is that it doesn't matter so much so far because Rabbi Yehuda would agree, in this case, that you are pater. Why? Because his whole malacha she'nitzricha l'gufa chiyuv is only be metakein, is only in a situation where you're doing something constructive. Here, you're doing something destructive. So we'll have to talk about that. Essentially, when we talk about Rabbi Yehuda, we can talk about Rabbi Yehuda and the Rambam in one breath, because the Rambam essentially agrees with Rabbi Yehuda about malacha she'nitzricha l'gufa, saying that he's chayiv, even though our attitude of halacha is generally that you are pater. So when you talk about it before the Rishonim, you say the Das Rabbi Yehuda. You talk about it lahalacha, you say the Das the Rambam. And it's not so clear that we totally dismiss the Rambam lahalacha. We'll talk about that. So you're shifting it for the generations, the Das Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara, the Das the Rambam, and the Rishonim. So even according to them, in this Gemara, they're going to agree that you are pater. Because it is called Mekalkel. Now, it's not so obvious that's called Mekalkel. Why is that not so obvious? What's a little bit surprising about calling this Mekalkel? You're making a hole. But the assumption seems to be that the hole is bad. Right? So even if we grant that assumption, and that's also a questionable assumption we'll get to in a second, but even if we grant the assumption that the hole is bad, there's something here. You're also making out of dirt that you're using. Right? So you want the dirt, and you're taking the dirt. So why is that called Mekalkel? That should be like a lot of other things where, okay, you're causing a problem here, but you're doing something positive here. And if you're doing something positive, that should be enough to call them a malacha. So that's a discussion that the Sfarim have. And it's also something we'll get into a little bit more. For our purposes, probably the easiest approach is that, yes, it's productive, but it's not productive in a way that's relevant to this malacha at all. Right? This malacha is about acting upon the karka. As far as the karka is concerned, it's mekalkel. You have some benefit for this, that's great, but the benefit is not at all relevant to the malacha of Choresh, Chofer, that whole family. So apparently that's enough to call this mekalkel, but even though it's productive, but not productive as relevant to this malacha. So Sammy's point is also well taken, that what about the fact that a hole might be useful? So it's also interesting that there are some who assume that the Magen Mishnah talks about this. The Magen Mishnah says that this is only true by bias. That this Gemara is attached to the bias Gemara, which is not obvious at all, but that's how he's assuming. right, the Magen Mishnah, that he assumes that this is talking right away, right before this, we had talked about some bias gemaras. And somewhere you do this in a house, it's called bonin. So attached to that, the Gemara brings up this case of a chofer guma b'shabbos. So it says it's not. Could have been talking about anything. But the Magen Mishnah assumes that, no, it's only talking about a specific setting in which it's considered to be makalkum. So you dig a hole in your house, see how your mother reacts, you find out very quickly that's called makalkum. You dig a hole outside, so he assumes that's not called makalkum. So the Ekle Tal says he doesn't understand so much why that's true. He doesn't necessarily understand why it should be assumed that outside is not called makalkel. That's like, it could also be makalkel again. So do another experiment at home. Start digging holes in your backyard and see what your mother says. Or even better, in your front yard and see what your mother says. Right? So chances are you may discover that that's makalkel as well. So Rav Vosner has a discussion about this in his Tshuvas. And he points out that this is a machlokas Rishonim, not just the Magen Mishnah, but there are a lot of other Rishonim who get involved with this, and he's got a whole list of those Rishonim who talk about one way, talk about the other way, who assume that this is a general Torah, like it sounds like from the Gemara. And on the other hand, Rishonim who say that no, in the house that's makalkel, and outside it's considered to be not makalkel, and you're going to be chayiv. Anybody who wants to read this aside, by the way, I'll tell you where to look. If you want to look at tomorrow, I didn't put it on the Mar Makomos, but there is, Rav Vosner has a couple of tshuvas about this in the Shevet Alevi, which you can look at inside. So essentially that sounds basically like a Metzias question, right? It sounds like it's really just a subjective question. Is it good or is it bad?
Doesn't the Talmud deal exactly with that? It just talks about planting seeds and pushing around later on, on Kofi Gimel.
Right.
Saying that sometimes you plant seeds by eating holes.
Right, so essentially it comes out to what you're doing. It sounds like it's basically a Metzias question. And Rav Vosner, in one of these tshuvas, he basically emphasizes that because he says that maybe it all depends on how big the hole is. And that, and here again, there's kind of maybe a distinction between inside and outside. So again, if you're doing your home experiments, dig a small hole in your living room and see what kind of reaction your mother has. And dig a small hole outside and see how big a hole you can dig before she gets upset. So you could probably go a little farther. You could probably get away with a bigger hole outside than inside. So there's still a difference between bias and outside, but it doesn't mean that you're free to do whatever you want to a sadeh without it ever being called makalkel, or in the case of halacha, the other way around, that you're free because it's makalkel. But the point is, eventually it will be makalkel, even basadeh. I think standing is up first, then you.
Differentiate also between the purpose and the hole.
Right, and that's also what Tuvi was talking about.
You make a huge hole if you're trying to fix, a water main that's coming through the house or something like that. You need a big hole, and that's very useful to construct the hole.
Right, it's also a question that's, it's an almanac situation.
Right? Like also be,
but what you're talking about, trying to get to the water main.
Or just if you
want to build a mikveh in your backyard.
Right.
Right, so then that would for sure be constructed. Right, so there's two elements here. So the purpose and the extent to which it becomes makalkel. We're talking about on various sides of our continuum here, right? Because we're talking about a positive standard in order to make it constructive, and it's also considering a negative standard. At what point does it reach the level where it's bad enough that makes it a patur by itself because it is kilkul?
I just don't understand why it would be pleasure if you dug a hole in the outdoors, because basically any hole could be useful. I mean, because it would be called that you're ruining the ground, but really you're not. If I put a hole in the ground, I could put three seeds in there.
That seems to be the premise of the Magen Mishnah. It seems to be where the Magen Mishnah is coming from. That essentially the outside can always tolerate holes. Holes always have some purpose. And that there's a fundamental objective difference between inside and outside. It seems to be along the lines of the way you're saying it. And that's what the Ekle Tal is surprised at. Is that really true? Is that such a black and white distinction that inside is bad and outside is good? And maybe that's not the case, and that's where Rav Vosner shows us essentially a whole debate among Rishonim. So what are we identifying here? Identifying somewhat of a Metzias question. It's somewhat just a practicality. What do you get from holes outside? But the Metzias seems to affect, as we said a second ago, two sides of the equation. But on the one hand, that there's more constructive purpose, But also, maybe we're saying that as far as Mekalkel, Mekalkel has a threshold as well. That maybe for it to be Mekalkel, it's got to be bad to a certain degree. And maybe there's a higher threshold for what's bad outside than what's bad inside. If you do this experiment at home with your mother, please don't tell her that I told you to do it. Who's up next?
Is it that significant, or is that just an example?
That might be significant, because then that gets us into the next phase. Right? So if you saw the Magen Avraham, so there was a fascinating discussion that the Magen Avraham quotes from the Trumas Hadashin. And what is the Trumas Hadashin hold? The Trumas Hadashin holds that what if you have a case, we have a Chofer Guma, the Eino Tzarech, Lo Afra of the Loba Guma. Right? You're digging a hole, and you don't need either. You don't need the hole, nor do you need the dirt. Sorry?
Why are you digging a hole?
Why are you doing it? You're in the mood to dig a hole. Yeah, exercise. Energy, sorry? The truth is, I'm afraid to give too much of a reason why you might do it, because the reason might end up opening up another halachic discussion. Like when we talk about, you'll see we talk about halachic and spiritual gufa, like addressing your passion can also be considered a tikkun. We talk about kriya, for example. So I don't want to start speculating as to reasons why you're doing this. For whatever reason you're doing this, you're deciding to dig a hole, not for the purpose of dirt, nor for the purpose, you don't want the dirt, you don't want the hole. You're doing it anyway. So what does the Trumas Hadashin say about that? According to at least Rabbi Yehuda, let's stick within our Gemara's at least working for both, for Rabbi Yehuda and everybody else. So even if you say, Malach HaShem is Shriyuf L'Gufa is Chayim, so what do we call that according to the Trumas Hadashin? Chayim. Says, even though if all you need is the dirt, Rabbi Yehuda agrees your pater, but if you don't need either, according to Trumas Hadashin, you're chayiv. So the Magen Avraham is very puzzled about that. Like I see some faces in the room. That doesn't seem to make sense. Right? That seems to be, you should say, a kal v'chomer from the case of the Gemara. In the case of the Gemara, you don't need the normal function, but you need something else. And we say your pater. Here, you don't need anything. You don't need either of them. So you should be super pater. You should be even more pater. What's the idea of being chayiv for that, Sammy, to say?
Not rest, meaning you're doing something useless. You're not resting.
Oh, right. So you're saying, so as far as the whole Shabbos question and distributing your rest, that's a fair question to bring up. But within the case of the Gemara, you're not resting either. So why should you be resting?
You're doing something purposeful for Shabbos. I mean, I'm assuming you're digging the hole for the dirt for something that you need now. So otherwise,
but why even more than the case of the Gemara? What Svara makes it more than what the Gemara is talking about? Right, in the Gemara's case, Rabbi Yehuda agrees, you want the dirt, you're pater.
Yeah.
According to Trumas Hadashin, you don't want anything, you're chayiv. What makes that more chayiv than the case in the Gemara? Jonathan?
So you can't say kal v'chomer that's more pater, because the case that we mentioned in the Gemara, mm-hmm. we had a factor which made it change its shrikha l'gufa. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting rid of that factor, so uh-huh. therefore it would go back on itself to be like it originally was.
Oh, so that's a very important line. I think there's a lot to that. And we'll see, when we talk about Malach HaShem and Tzrich HaLagufa, this comes up a lot in the difference between Davar Shein and Meskaven and Malach HaShem and Tzrich HaLagufa. That sometimes having an assertive purpose makes a big difference rather than no purpose. Because when I have a different goal, okay, so now this defines this as outside the Shabbos definition. But when I don't have any goal, so that's a problem. That becomes open to becoming Chai for Shabbos again. Shabbos can come in and fill the vacuum here, in this case, the literal vacuum. Not exactly, although it's not totally irrelevant. But the idea is that Malach HaShem Tzrich HaLagufa is more of an active p'tur rather than a lack of a chiyuv. That it's not that when we say you're not chayiv because of Malach HaShem Tzrich HaLagufa, it's not because something's lacking, because it's rather because the intent for a different purpose is getting in the way. Now that's a very relevant point. We get into Malach HaShem Tzrich HaLagufa, especially, I'll say it again. You see, when you contrast it with Davar Shein and Meskaven, it's brought up, and I'm only saying it kind of backwards now because we're not up to that sugi yet, but just to address the way you're saying it, that's a very relevant issue. So Davar Shein and Meskaven generally means you don't intend for action A to cause action B. And Malach HaShem Tzrich HaLagufa, limited definition, means you're doing the action, that's the malacha, with full intent. happens to be. Your intent, though, is for something else. So what makes Malacha Sheni Tzrich L'Gufa different? So in both cases, you don't intend for a Malacha. But the fact that you're intending for it, that Malacha, the action that is the Malacha, you have intent for it to be a different thing, might go a long way towards negating the Malacha. So it's more of a positive negation rather than a lack of some type of qualifier.
How's the Psyche Ratio fit in there?
So Psyche Ratio, as we'll see, when we talk about it, we haven't really gotten into it yet, is essentially the modifier of Davar Sheino Miskaven. Right, so Davar Sheino Miskaven normally may be Pater, it's also Machlokes Gemara. Normally, if you don't intend for the action, you're doing action A, and action A is going to create action B, it's going to cause action B, so we could say you're Pater, because you have no intent for that. But Psyche Ratio puts it back into Chiyuv, because Psyche Ratio means, but if you know it's definitely going to happen, then somehow that takes away from your ability to disconnect yourself from the secondary result.
Right. It's a bit like you have to shear a lamb's wool because it's a hot day, I think.
Well, we'll talk about how exactly that fits, and could fit into either. So the definition, sometimes you could define these terms in ways that they overlap. So if you're getting confused by that, we'll get to that after Yontif. But just as far as now, Jonathan's point is very well taken, that maybe it's not so obvious if there's a Kal V'chomer. That maybe to say that if I'm Pater here because I don't need the hole, I should be even more Pater if I don't need the hole or the dirt. No, it's not so obvious, because the need for the dirt might go a long way towards getting me off the hook for the hole. That's definitely one possible element of the story. Vosner, mention him again, in a different tshuva, he talks about this as well, and he has a different approach. He has an approach where there's something else coming out of the positive need for the dirt. And this has interesting implications for our whole definition of Choresh. He focuses on the Me'iri. And the Me'iri has one clause there which he thinks is an important clue. If you think about this, it's a very interesting step possibly in our whole puzzle here. It says that the Me'iri says that the case in our Gemara, your putter for, the Me'iri throws in, the guy needs the dirt, he takes the dirt, and he goes away with the dirt. What element is the Me'iri identifying that's different from the Trimas Hadeshin's case? What happens to the dirt?
Nothing.
Takes it away, as opposed to being here. So perhaps the crucial difference is that in the case in the Gemara, normal, let's look at three different cases and we'll see where the linkage is. Choresh, I dig, I plow up the ground, and all the dirt that I'm dealing with is all there in the ground, now all plowed. The case in the Gemara, I dig in the ground, I take the dirt, I bring it home, and I put it on my kitchen table. The case in the Trumas Hadeshin, I dig up the dirt, and where's the dirt? Still there. So what's it more similar to? It's more similar to straight out Choresh. Right? Because now the dirt that I'm dealing with is all there in the ground. So what might make it not really Choresh? So maybe it's the Malacha Sheni Tzrich L'Gufa, because again, I'm doing the essential action with all the parts now, because I'm messing up the dirt, working up the dirt, and leaving all this dirt here as part of the ground. But I didn't want to do that. I wasn't wanting to interact with the ground. I was doing it for some external reason. But then maybe that's just the Malacha Sheni Tzrich L'Gufa rather than the Kalkel. So Rabbi Yehuda, the Rambam, might still be Mechayev with that. While in our Gemara, they potter. Because in our Gemara, you walked away with the dirt. So therefore, that's a Kilkel. While in this case, the dirt's there in the ground, so essentially, physically, externally, you have a picture of Choresh. May not be a Malacha HaTzricha L'Gufa, you might be Pater according to Rov Rishonim for that reason, but according to the Rambam and Rabbi Huda, could still be a Malacha Sheni Tzricha L'Gufa. You look a little troubled by that.
Even according to Me'iri, the Maisa Kilko, the case in the Gemara, not the net loss of dirt from the area, it's the whole.
Right.
The actions.
Right, but he said now the ground has all the same dirt.
So why does that make one kilko?
Because if the ground is missing, right, so now what'd you do? You acted upon this ground. And as far as Choresh is concerned, So the Chorish, again, we're interested in the land. That's one of the things we see from our Gemara. Right? Remember the point that our Gemara calls it Kilkul, even though there's a constructive purpose. So the Gemara seems to be saying we're only interested in the effect on the land. So as far as the land is concerned, in the Miri's example, you left the land messed up, and you had no intention to do anything Chorishtik to the land. In the case of the Trumas Hadeshim, so you didn't have intention, perhaps, but you left the land now plowed.
Even the Miri was talking, the Maisa Kilkul that he's talking about, is the whole.
Right.
See, he doesn't seem to think that the net loss of dirt is what makes it Kilkul.
Although I don't know if that's necessarily Mukhrach. You see, essentially now, if we don't view land as a per inch basis, as you have land with a hole in it, but you also have that land that was dug up is also now a part of the greater land, and it's now dug up, it's now softened. And it's a part of that land. If you soften land and took it away completely, maybe that's nothing. So you have, it's not affecting the land. You don't have any desire to interest in the land. They have a different purpose. So then that could be nothing. But here, all the land that you're dealing with is all there in the land. Well, some of it's next to the hole, but it's all part of this land. So the land is plowed up. And that's the effect. So again, the intent wasn't there. So those who potter Malacha Shem Tzrich L'Gufa will likely still potter. But for as far as Mekalkel, so it's not necessarily considered to be a kill. Your point's well taken. You're saying that the damaging that he did with the hole is still there. So why are we saying that's not there just because the land, the dirt, is next to it as opposed to in it? So apparently seeing the broader picture, then it loses its status as skillful because all the land, whenever you plow, you're shuffling up land and putting some land here and some land there, and the overall net practice, the overall net effect is that the land is plowed.
That's not true. Any kiltul, you rip to his paper.
I don't know if that's always true because most other kiltulim don't, like we talk about ripping a piece of paper, so there's no other value to having paper that's generally shorn up. You know, it's not like there's a malacha of an action people like doing where they tear up a lot of paper. So here, a choresh involves throwing up ground and basically digging it up and turning it over. So this is a step in that, and that's why choresh and chofer are related to begin with. You're right, it's an interesting point that if we look at the hole is unaffected. The hole is just as makulkul as it was before. So to say, your issue then is really with Trumas Hadeshim. So they say in Trumas Hadeshim, you still don't find enough basis to be mechayif for that, and that's probably still a reasonable question. It happens to be that Rav Ozner, when he says this, he says he thinks the Trumas Hadeshim is not really fully explained, it's still difficult, and this could be a little bit of an explanation. So maybe what he's getting at is your question that it still leaves the hole essentially still mikulkal. Yes, sir.
So are we saying that when you take the dirt away, now it's then there is it is mikulkal? I mean, everyone agrees to that?
Right, that's what it's well that when you take the dirt away, right, that's what it seems to be. Because our Gemara talks about it. That's what our Gemara says, you need the dirt, everyone would agree that's called mikulkal.
Is it because the action that you're doing demonstrates? I mean, is it like an extreme or more extreme form of Lakshan Srikla Gufa? The Lakshan Srikla Gufa is I don't need the hole. But now, not only do I not really need the hole, everything I'm doing, I'm thinking it's just an exaggerated step. Or is it
that's a gilui on your action that that's your makshava?
Yeah.
The fact you took it away? I don't think that's what he's focusing on. I think what he's focusing on is the fact that right now, as a kilku, you left the hole and there's no benefit. There's just a hole, and the hole doesn't even have dirt somewhere else that you can use.
If you take the dirt with you and use it somewhere else, then there is a benefit.
But that was the original question. The question, why are we calling this mekalkel if there's some kind of benefit somewhere else? Right. So since, and that's a chiddush, really, that's surprising that the Gemara calls that mekalkel, but that we're stuck with according to everyone. Right? That's you can't escape from that in the Gemara, because the Gemara says, you need the dirt, and still it's mekalkel. So that, the Rishon and the Achron discuss. If you look, by the way, there's a beautiful sefer called Taurus HaMalachos. He has a lengthy discussion of that issue. So yeah, that's a can be a question no matter how you look at it. And the simplest approach is that we look at it per the malacha, and then since in the malacha of chorech, there's no benefit, and whatever benefit you get is completely separate from the chorech, we'll call that makalkal anyway, even though there is some constructive benefit. Okay, so that's again we'll revisit this when we get right after the yontif, bring that into malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. So this is these gemaras. Zomer Sarah Flaits and then this one are going to be very relevant, but as far as the implications directly for Choresh and directly for the Sugya, those are some of the important points that come up. So, what about the whole Av Kolda discussion here? So we had this discussion recently in terms of Zareya. Right? There's a very similar line for this malacha as it will be for the next few malachos. Right? It's the same line that we saw in the Gemara that we spent some time trying to figure out. All of these actions, Anoteya, Mavrich, Markiv, Chai, Mishim, Zareya. So here also you have a parallel line, HaChoresh, V'HaChofer, V'HaChoretz, Kulan, Malacha, Achasen. So if we never saw anything else, we would have said, that's all an Av. But now we're already accustomed to the fact that there is some room to quibble when you see that. And when you see that, there are still those who would interpret it as Avos, and those who interpret these as Toldos. So let's discuss that for a few minutes. What do we see here? What do we find in Rishonim about this particular grouping? And as with Zareya, thinking about these issues help us to understand the broader question of Toldos and their relationship to Avos. As we mentioned at the outset, all of Shabbos is essentially one sugi. Anything you talk about one malacha will affect your understanding of every other malacha. And Toldos is an ongoing sugi throughout all of Malacha Shabbos. So anything that we see about one out of Toldos relationship casts some light on the whole story. So what different views do we see here? Who sees these other malachos as an av?
Rambam,
right? So the Rambam, it's probably easiest to see that within the context of what he said about Zareya. What understanding can we see within the Rambam? Why would the Rambam say these are all one malacha? He's actually pretty explicit about what he's getting at. Right, this is really part of our whole discussion from the beginning of Choresh. That the Rambam presumably understands a function here, that anything that we do to make the ground work, so to speak, any type of yipui hakarka, avodas hakarka, is all a function of choresh, and therefore all these actions, they all share that function. Digging in the ground and furrows in the ground, it's all sharing a function. So for the Rambam, no pun intended again, he doesn't break new ground in this categorization, because it's very similar to what he said by Zareya. Right? He saw Zareya in terms of a function, saw all those functions as an av, and they all essentially count as an av. So here it's a very similar structure. I don't know if we see any reason to really distinguish between the two approaches, the Rambam by Zareya and the Rambam by Choresh. And if anything, it works backwards, that knowing that that's the way approach he seems to take is what has characterized our understanding of the Rambam for this whole sugya. Is that Gil was up?
Yeah, I was going to say Rashi.
Yeah, so Rashi says something else, right? So Rashi, let's hold off on for a second. I'll come back to him. But there's another view that says it's an av, which is interesting to note, that the Ritva also says it's an av. They're all avos. It also says all the actions are avos. But he has a different reason for saying that, and that also affects our understanding. And the Ritva essentially compares this to lachas that we're almost up to, not up to yet, about Zora, Borer, Umarach. And the Gemara has a line, if you've gone a little farther, and Ayin Gimel, so you've seen it at the bottom of this Amud, Hazora, V'haborer, V'hatochen, Merakeh. So the Gemara says, Hainu Zora, Hainu Bora, Hainu Merakeh. They're all essentially the same thing. Those are three different malachos that are about separating things and selecting out good things from bad things. So the Gemara says, Avay V'rova, D'amu Shavayu, Kol Milsa, D'havi V'mishkan, Afal Gav, D'ikka, D'damila, Chashuvle. That anything that was in the Mishkan, even though there are other malachos that are very similar to it, it gets counted anyway. So these three malachos are essentially comparable, but because they all took place in the Mishkan, they're all counted. Yes?
So, how would it be different between Av and Toldo?
Right, yes. So that's exactly what the Ritva wants to discuss here.
Fine, so historically there's a difference. That Toldo wasn't done in Mishkan and Av was, but if I did Choresh and Chofer,
you know, in a sense at the same time or one action. Mm-hmm. I have one chaylos or two.
So you have one for that, but that's what the Ritva wants to explain, because it's not immediately obvious why it is. So they have, so essentially, although actually, according to him, actually it's all two of us. But why that is, so he has to, it's a little confusing. So why is, what's the difference between that and this? Why is this listed and those not? So actually, it ends up being the Chayv 1. Sorry, so it comes out, it's a little confusing. It comes out of Yechayv 1. Why Yechayv 1? Because essentially they're all the same. Right? So essentially they're all the same action.
You're continuously doing one malacha.
Right, so you did two different acts of Kodesh, essentially. Right. But why is it that they're all considered to be av malachos, according to him? Because the difference between this and Borei Zora Merake is that on the one hand, they were both all in the Mishkan, both sets of three were all done in the Mishkan. We'll see in a few minutes that not everyone works off that premise, but that's the premise that Ritva works off, that all of these were done in the Mishkan. So what's the difference between the selecting ones and the ground ones? That the selecting ones are essentially all done on the same object, step after step. As we see in Sidur of the past, these are all three steps, all done to the same items. So even though they're all similar purposes, but the three different actions done to the same items makes it three different actions. While these three, Choresh, Chofer, Choresh, it's not that one process will have you doing all three. They're just different circumstances under which we'll do one or do the other. They were all done in the Mishkan in one context or another. They all are comparable enough to share the Av slot. So they're all called Avos. But they're not counted separately, because if you're dealing with one action, one decision, one context, you will probably only do one of them. As opposed to Borei Zora Merake, where the process requires you to do all three.
And then we go first. Do you have anything to
say? I'm going to
say it. Okay, yeah.
According to that separation that's based on, because which one right after the other, but problematic with the opinion that we said that the whole idea of Sidura is anything is simply just there like a memory to not really hold up the significance.
That may be, although we weren't sure that was the case. We just mentioned that as a possibility.
So it's problematic for that.
Maybe not, because, you have to figure out whether or not that means this. This contradicts that idea. It still just means that these three have a separate identity. I don't know if it necessarily casts everything in this category with a special rule. For example, if you say there's some kind of din that applies to all of Sidur the Pas, that's one thing. I'm not sure if that's in that category, but it's something to keep in mind as you consider that question in the broader context.
I think it's interesting that so far you've seen Zaria and Koresh. You can be doing one action, and your action changes, but it's still the same malacha, which means that malacha is able to, like, in a sense, morph. It's able to change.
So how do you define the action change? That's part of the question. When you say do the same
for
the
action. Right, I can be applying it once, and then I just start to dig. I'm using different muscles, I'm using a different system, I'm not using, you know, an ox anymore.
Right.
But it's still considered to be the same thing.
So I guess that's a very important point, right? So where does it change? When does it change significantly enough to be something else? So in the Ritva's comparison here, I think he's essentially saying that's why a good example of this is what we've seen so far about Ofa and Bishul, that they're essentially the same thing. They're the same enough to be one thing. And in a more specific sense than the Rambam is saying it. Right? The Rambam is saying that these actions are all different actions, but they share the same purpose, so the Av is broad enough to include things that share the same purpose.
But I think it's different with Bishul and Ofa, because you can't bake a chicken, you can't cook a cake. Meaning, if you have a king, you're doing one thing with the chicken, you're doing one thing with the ground, you can do lots of things.
Right, that's true. The difference is the parallel is not perfect. Right? The parallel is not perfect. But I think that's essentially what Richard was getting at, that here your function is essentially the same thing. It's just if I want to bake a cake, it's going to be baking. If I want to prepare a chicken, it's going to be cooking.
I mean, it's
so they can occupy the same slot, even though they are essentially have differences between them.
Basically
the same thing. Right. So essentially, to the difference between the Rambam and the Ritva, for whatever purpose this difference has, is that according to the Rambam, they're all avos, because avos is a broad category. Things that have the same general function all get called av. While according to the Ritva, it's more than that. They're the same thing. They're literally the same thing. That the act of choresh really includes all these things. And we just use different words because of the different contexts in which it comes up. There's a sefer that you probably have not come across. It's called Vizosa Bracha. It's a sefer zikaron for Bracha Barnett. So there's an article here by Yaakov Grossman about the Yanim of Choresh. So in case you ever come across this sefer, he has a nice analysis of that discussion between the Rambam and the Ritva. So essentially, it's just a difference between we say that more than one av within an av. What do we mean? The Rambam saying it's essentially a broad definition. And the Ritva being a little more specific than that. It's not a broad definition. It's the same thing. These are all the same thing. Afi and Bishul, let's say, are the same thing. Now, in terms of the toldos, who says it's a tolda? The Yerushalmi, say that? Yeah, the Yerushalmi says it's a tolda. And Gil started to say before, who else?
Raj, I wasn't sure, but.
Right, so.
It seemed like the only cousins are right, he spelled it out, but the other one's wrong.
Okay, so that you're inferring it from Rashi. So I'll tell you a Rashi that does say it straight out. If you all look at Rashi, Mem Vav Mid Beis, see towards the bottom of the page, Yisura Daraisa. Says the Chofer, the Amr Lakaman, told the Chorish. So he's basically assuming the Gemara says it. The Gemara doesn't use the word Tolda. He's essentially reading it in the Gemara. And the Gemara says that when the Gemara identifies Chorish with Chofer, says Rashi here, it says it was a Tolda. So why would Rashi be pushed into understanding it as a Tolda? So the way we cast Rashi when we talked about Zareya is that Rashi is interested for a Tolda that you have to share, for an Av, you have to share form and function. That if you want to be a Tolda, you'll share function, but the form is significantly different. So why does Chofer have such a difference? Does that structure work for Chofer vis-a-vis Choresh? For digging and plowing? Have any thoughts on that matter?
If we're told that you would only have the function?
Yeah, that's it. Told it has the function, right? So this, you have the function. Rashi seems to agree that all of this, within his framework, let's say, weakening the land. So all of this weakens the land. So how is it fundamentally different in a way that keeps it from being an av? Donnie?
Chofer, you move the land.
Uh-huh.
Chofer, you're sort of mixing it around itself.
Uh-huh.
Chofer, you're taking it and putting it somewhere else.
Okay, so that's probably the most likely possibility. Right? The fact that since the land is not being shuffled within itself, but rather really being reassigned, maybe that separates it, again, no pun intended, from the, you just cannot avoid it, separates it from the gather of Choresh the way Rashi would see it. I think Sammy was up first. Presumably, yeah. And it's so certainly, especially because he thinks the Gemara says it. Right. So if the Gemara says it, it says it as much about both.
The Chariots would be very similar, or, I mean, at least my understanding of Chariots would be just taking the smaller ones.
Right, it's an interesting question.
What is Chariots? I mean, first of all, you have to ask, what is Chariots?
Right, it's an interesting question. Right, so it has a little bit to do with how you do it, which is also perhaps relevant, but you mean within this framework of Rashi, maybe it's a little bit less blatant and a little bit less obvious, I think it should be. Aaron, did you want to?
I was going to ask, why do we assume that just the moving dirt, or is it reassigning dirt to a different spot is so much worse than, or so much less than mixing dirt within itself? Meaning the form looks a little bit different, but it's not so different.
Right, I don't know if we would have assumed it without Rashi telling us that it's a Tolda. I think the question is, once we know that, or once we're assuming that, we could be open to another understanding within Rashi also. I think once we're assuming that that's where Rashi is coming from, that seems to be the focus. Or possibly just how you do it, possibly in terms of the tools. Maybe that's also relevant.
So the form.
That would be form, right, and that's what Rashi's interested in. Rashi's, if we're assuming the form deviates, so where does the form deviate? Does it deviate in terms of what you were doing? Like we talked about Zomer because you're taking away instead of putting in?
Right.
Or maybe is it just how you're doing something similar, which would maybe give us a little more room for Choreitz to still also be a Tola?
If you want to say it's about the tools, you see that the Rambam, even though he doesn't go this way, he definitely defines Choreitz very much about the tools.
And therefore...
So it seems that the tools isn't part of the definition. So
wait, the Rambam still holds us all.
I know.
Either way,
this is a way of saying that, you know, in Israel, you don't necessarily say, when you plant it with a spade or a shovel, it doesn't make a difference. See, by Farisha, that through a lot of the Rishonim seems to build upon the exact tools that you're using also.
So you're saying that for the Rambam it's okay because he's interested in what you're doing anyway overall.
Wait, at least his definition includes the tools. Rashi, who's looking very much at the form, also has a definition including tools, but
that becomes a crucial,
becomes an important,
right? It becomes a crucial disqualifier. So in the Meiri you find an approach also that focuses on the form. And the Meiri, by emphasizing the form, seems to be saying that that itself, by emphasizing the tools rather, so that by emphasizing the tools, he seems to be saying that that puts it out of the Av category as well. So he seems to be working off an understanding that all we have is what was done in the Mishkan. And we mentioned a few minutes ago that the Ritva was working off the assumption all the actions were done in the Mishkan, and apparently other Rishonim, and you see this explicitly in some Rishonim, did not assume that to be the case. It seems to be the case that only Choresh was in the Mishkan, and even that we saw we had some difficulty with because of the context of the desert. But let's say at most Choresh.
Say that about most of the Malacha.
About the desert issue?
Yeah.
Well, really just Zorei and Choresh.
In general, in the desert.
Right, really just Zorei and Choresh that we have that issue. So we mentioned that the Menchas Chinuch discusses approaches. Zatosa says that it's about the miraculous growing that happened. And Menchas Chinuch says it doesn't matter if it was a miraculous growth or not. It's what would have been necessary had they done it in the normal way. So that aside, but maybe it's at most Choresh that was done. Again, this directly contradicts the Ritva from a few minutes ago. In the Chananya case, a different Rishonim had different assumptions about what was done. But the Meiri seems to assume that that was the case, and therefore, working off that assumption, we found this in other Rishonim also, we're talking about Zareya, maybe that's all that counts on the Av list, and the other Malachos don't make it on the Av list. Okay, any other suggestions about any of those views? We see anything else that could be real there? Yeah.
Sorry, could you? You said that the Meiri emphasizes the tools aspect, which seems to be that.
You do it with a different tool, it becomes something else.
Because of the different form.
Right. Now, this will be a major element, by the way, when we talk about Borer and Zora and Meraki. Tools, again, also play a big role in defining the Malacha. And there, at least they were all in the Mishkan, and here the Meiri doesn't think that was the case. Jonathan?
So according to the Meiri, so is he talking about like what you actually do with or what the derech is? For example, if you do them all by hand, then they're all torn off, it's all
avosin? Presumably not. Presumably then that's just a different way of doing...
It's not the derech.
Yeah, that's the derech. The malacha is defined by the tool. Which gets us into another major point. This is probably the last major point that we'll talk about in terms of Choresh. Not that there is not much else to say. The other things, especially Ashvuye Gumos, things like that, we'll talk about their halachic ramifications specifically, which are very significant. So Be'ez Hashem on Sunday, I mean tomorrow is Parsha Day, on Sunday we'll talk about the halachic ramifications of some of these dinim. But there's one other major area which I put a little bit about on the Mar Makomos, which also has halachic ramifications that will be for Sunday. We'll talk about some of the basic yisodos today. So what about when we mentioned tools a second ago, what about animals? So if you do Charisha with an ox, as was the want, then, so how does that affect the story? So this is a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, but not directly practically. They both agree that if somebody plows with an ox on Shabbos, he's chayav misa. The only question is, how do we come to that conclusion? Because the Rambam, yes sir?
On
Right, exactly. So the Pasuk mentions the Behema.
Right.
So the Rambam says that's a Kiddush. The fact that the Pasuk goes out of its way to say that the Behema is part of the L'man Yanua, what's that talking about? That's talking about things like Harisha, which are done with a Behema.
The Rambam.
Maimonides. So because of that, that's how we know. Apparently, otherwise, we wouldn't have known. Now, there's another concept here called Mechamer. The Gemara talks about a lav of Mechamer, that to make an animal do something on Shabbos is a lav. In other words, it's not a chi of skila. It's not something you get executed for. Can't get malchus for it either. The whole discussion, how exactly it plays out, this is a lower level Torah prohibition. So to have an animal do something on your behalf of a malacha, to make him do it, to guide him in doing it, is considered to be a prohibition. Here, if you are plowing with it, says the Rambam, this pasuk tells you that that's also considered to be more than that, it's considered to be a malacha. And it's not just mechamer, it's harisha, and you're in huge trouble. Yes?
The difference is that in one case, it's of the norm for animals to plow, whereas if you have an animal do something which you would normally do, you might think it's a loophole.
You might, right. So that's
also, I can use everything with my own hands, so I say, I'll get my ox to do it.
That's part of it, right. So then the normal way gets into a... has a major role in defining this, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. Creating malachas through animals has a lot of interesting ramifications. Where exactly mechamer fits in, what the parameters of mechamer are not 100% agreed upon. There's some major disputes about this, lahalacha. I've heard about people who want to have their TV turned on Shabbos, so they put some candy on the knobs because they know that the dog will go in. Look for knobs, something like that. It's all kinds of different things that people come up with who are making their animals do things. So the parameters of mechamer is a really separate issue. But the relevant part to us here is the Rambam says that this pasuk tells us that you have harisha with an animal, you're chayiv skila. That's considered to be a liable act of harisha. And the Ramban disagrees. The Ramban, the one that put on the Maramakomos was the Sefer HaMitzvos. Could have mentioned also that it's also in the Chidushim and Kufn and Gimel. In Shabbos, he also expresses his position there, that he doesn't think the Rambam is correct in terms of how he gets to his conclusion. He agrees with the Rambam that plowing with an animal is a chiyuv skila. So it's not because of the pasuk. Because otherwise, if that were the case, if it's only a chiddush from this pasuk, since it wouldn't be clear that it applies on yontif, where we assume it does apply, would it be clear that it applies in shemitah as an act of harisha? So he's not satisfied that it all comes from this pasuk, not just because of those questions, but also misvari says, no, this is what harisha is. You know, harisha is that you are essentially using this animal as your tool. Right, we spoke about it a minute ago about the role of tools in defining the malacha. So too, using the ox is part of the normal tools for harisha, and he doesn't have an independent identity in terms of this action. It's not like the ox is doing it and you're not doing it. The ox is your hoe. It's your raking tool. So that's the approach the Ramban takes. And it could make a difference, because this has broader implications for how we relate to doing malacha such as this. There's a whole discussion, kind of, if you look in the Torah's malachas, he has a lot about this. And some of the Achronis, the Chemed and others, wonder why is it not an issue of Shnayim Shasu. Shnayim Shasu is also one of these broad Shabbos klalim, which we'll probably discuss later, because there is a whole sugi about it, and we can do straight. We'll eventually get to it. Gemara's come up on Sadi Beis and the like. So some raise the question, is this essentially, if we have two people doing a malacha, then normally that's a p'tur. Right? If we have a book, I could carry this book outside without an eruv, so that's a malacha. But if Dani and I carry it together, so we each hold an edge of it, so that's called Shnayim Shasu. So Sandy's looking at me like, what am I talking about? Why is that Shnayim Shasu? And I, sorry? So there's two reasons to question it. One is the question is, does an animal count as another party? Which the Gemara already raises the question, to what extent does the lack of Mazdin, the other party, affect the equation? But also, presumably, that this is the normal process. The normal process is you need one person to ride the animal or to direct the animal, and the animal to do the animal's part. So any malacha which requires two people, there's no exclusion of Shnayim Shasso. Shnayim Shasso means if Donnie and I were carrying out this bench, so we'd probably need a lot more than two people. We're carrying out something that requires two people, so nobody would say that we're potter for that. We're only potter because we're carrying out this book, which doesn't require two people. Normally one person would carry it, so two people together, so then we're both potter. And it's a complex sugi, which eventually we'll try to get to the order of the Gemara when it comes up. Hi.
Now there's like two parts of the malacha as opposed to like...
Which one has two parts?
Like porridge.
Two parts, or there's two roles. It's a two-man job, a two-party job, one being the person and one being the ox. And that's essentially the approach which I think makes a lot of sense. I think they're both true. The question of to what extent the animal can take away your chiyuv, and to what extent this is really appropriate for that category, they're both questionable. This is an extensive discussion today. Is there coming out of this enough? Should we say that there should be some lack of your full participation because you're doing it with an animal? And it doesn't seem to be that that's the case. So, this idea the Ramban has, that essentially this is a tool. This is not a special reason for the pasuk. This is essentially something that is considered to be like a rake, as far as you're concerned. So that can have other implications. Maybe Tal understands this in the context of Malachas Machshavas. In other words, that maybe you could have made a case to exempt somebody because of his limited role here. Except that since this is a normal way this is done, so then Malachas Machshavas essentially brings it back in. Working along similar lines, the Chazon Ish, yeah? And Eglik Hal says that Malachas Machshavas is really the operative element here. That since this is the way you normally plow, the way people normally plow, so regardless of what reason there might be to say your involvement is limited, Malachas Machshavas is going to put it back in. So along similar lines, the Chazon Ish says that if you use a machine to plow, then that is a full malacha d'oraisa. Working off the approach of the Ramban, that the machine essentially is your tool, just like the animal is your tool. So we have, let's say, three different madrigas of tools. You have a rake or a hoe, whatever it is that you would use if you were to stand there by yourself. You have your animal that's much more powerfully pulls along something like this. Or you could have a machine that does it, that you are pushing buttons and directing. And all of those, the Chazon Ish understands that that's malachas chayrish d'oraisa. That's all within the same category. That's all considered to be the tool of your hand. And I think his focus is not so much just on dera issues, but on the fact that all of these instruments are considered to be bottle to you, essentially, that you are the one directing them, therefore this is all your koach. So the fact that you are making the machine operate essentially makes it your decision, your action, your power, and therefore it's all your maisa. Obviously, separate from the other electrical issues that come up, which the Chazon Ish himself would also take extremely seriously, as would others, but maybe not as severely as the Chazon Ish. So there are many other malachas involved. But he would consider there to be an act of full-fledged choresh here as well. I think I mentioned to somebody that if you look in Rabbi Ribiat's book, he's got a picture of a combine and explains the word combine, which was made because of different actions put together, but also it involves many different malachos being combined, and that I think he counts there eight different malachos that you could violate on Shabbos if you drive a combine over your field.
Yeah.
So, again, very much in the do not try this at home category. But essentially, Rashi Pesach Frank disagreed. Rashi Pesach Frank thought that this whole level of control, says the Ramban, is essentially saying that you are directing what's happening. And that's what makes it your control. That's what makes it your tool. When it comes to a machine, so you may be setting the machine in motion, but the machine is essentially acting on its own. And therefore, the Ramban thought, the Har Tzvi, Tzvi Pesach Frank thought that within that understanding of the Ramban, that the Ramban's concept is not going to include the machine. Yes, sir.
I can understand that maybe it's coming from a perspective. Maybe I like this combine, just push a button, and there's a whole field for you. But mm-hmm. It's not so simple. You drive it, there's all kinds of stuff.
Sure. Right, so that's why I'm also not 100% sure if they're talking about the same type of reality. It's a question of the different types of machines, presumably. Right, so let's say I have a lawnmower. There's one type of machine where I have to stand there and push it to the right place. And let's say I have a robot, which I control from my computer where I'm sitting in my easy chair. So what exactly do we assume that all machines are put under the same heading as far as its purpose? So especially, the Chazon Ish could be yes. The Chazon Ish is basically saying that it all traces back to your decision to make the machine work. So that's all a tool. And we see from the Ramban that any tool that you're controlling, that you're making it do the malacha, that's the darach of the malacha. Not just because of Choresh, not just because of the Pasuk, L'man Yanuach, but because that's how your activity works. Your activity is all considered to be traced back to your decision to do this. While the Har Tzvi, seeing it in a more limited sense, that the machine is essentially functioning on its own, and that you had just pushed it, that's essentially indirect, and you are basically at rest now, so there would not be, according to him, a chiyuv. And I think you're right, that we have to figure out what categories different machines are in. Are all categories necessarily treated the same way? Maybe this is something that we will touch upon a little bit on Sunday in terms of more of the halacha l'maisa components. Dvar Yehoshua, for example. The Dvar Yehoshua is Yehoshua Menachem Ehrenberg, who was a dying in Tel Aviv. So he has a tshuva where he talks about the other Yisurim in general that get done through machines. He talks about the whole question of shaving with a machine versus not with a machine. On Shabbos or Laman D'Amr, that you can't shave with a shaver during the week, all the various different yisurim, to what extent does the machine's role play a difference? So there's a lot of application for that, a lot of it drawing from this whole machlokas here. So Baz Hashem, we'll talk about some of the practicalities, we'll talk about this Dvar Yeshua, we'll talk about some other related issues that come out of this whole question. But essentially the key point to be aware of is essentially the Ramban arguing on the Rambam that even though for their case they agree, all the details are basically the same, but the Rambam sees this as a special drasha in Shabbos that comes to tell us that the shor is also considered to be a part of the malacha because the pasuk talks about animals, while the Ramban is saying, no, I don't need the pasuk to tell me that. This is basically something you are controlling, something you are directing. It's your tool, and that allows for a broader understanding of the usage of animals and machines in terms of malachas. I think it was Sam A and Sam B over here in terms of the different teruchos, Sam East and Sam West. Yep.
Does the Ramban really think that the Rambam would hold that
Yom Tifu and Kilotr? No. This question against the Rambam, how does the Rambam deal with that if his source from the Pasuk is not going to...
does the Rambam really feel that the Rambam says that?
I don't think so. I think he's...
So then why
would we...
So you're saying... learn it from Shabbos to everything else.
Right, so you're saying the Melu, the Ramban, misunderstands the Rambam.
I mean,
right, you're saying that clearly the Rambam thought it meant something broader than that. So
just the pasuk for Shabbos.
Yeah.
He happens to be that this halacha has learned through.
That's the nature of some of these machlokas, and I argue on your svara, argue on your proof, even though you'll just say back to me that you think the svara works just as well for what you want to do. So that's not the first time you'll have an argument along those lines. Yes, sir.
How does the Rambam use the pasuk?
So that's a good question also. So in terms of, he just sees the whole structure of Yehudim is a little more complicated. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit when it comes to Machamer, it gets a little bit involved. But essentially the main point to see from here is the question of, do I need a special drasha to tell me that Choresh with the Behema is also called Choresh? Or the Ramban's view that it's self-evident, I don't need a pasuk to tell me this, this is essentially no different than the person doing it himself, and that having broader implications for other malachos and perhaps are for other Yisurim as well. Okay, any further questions or insights or attacks or critiques of any of those points? Okay, so let's just quickly review what we spoke about so far and put it in the context of the basic Chorish question. So we talked about today, we just added the points of talking about the question of Harisha Shnia, an implication from the Gemara that Yechayev for Harisha Shnia, that that's considered to be Chorish. Many Rishonim understood like that. The Rambam is a little bit ambiguous, and the Chassinah is also ambiguous. There's two different comments in Zareya and in Choresh. And the question of maybe it depends what kind of land we're talking about, as the Gemara itself seems to leave open for. The idea that Yishuv Chayev really works very well for the Shita Laharan. For others, it's somewhat of a question, but seems to be many Rishonim held Chayev anyway. And this somewhat parallels the case of Afar Tichuach, which we discussed a little bit complicated, at very fine ground, what exactly is the chiyuv or lack of chiyuv there, different Rishonim and different Gemaras in different ways, all surrounding around the question, are you chayev for Choresh if the ground is so fine and has already essentially had whatever Harisha done to it that's necessary, to what extent is there still a possibility of Choresh on top of that? And that's a common element between the Harisha Shnia and the Afar Tichuach questions. Then we talked about our very significant Gemara for the Melach Shem Tzvichu L'Gufa Sugya, the idea that if you dig a hole and you only need the dirt but not the hole, so then even Rabbi Huda agrees you are Pater, that's called Makalkel. So we saw a couple of points about that. First of all, a Machlokas Rishonim, if this is true everywhere or only in the house. And then the whole question of why should there be a distinction, Rav Osner and others pointing out to Machlokas Rishonim about this, and also the Pshara suggestion that maybe there's a big hole versus a small hole, which prompted us to discuss a little bit the whole question of Makalkel, is to what degree is Makalkel like an absence of any constructive purpose or an active negative purpose, which paralleled also a discussion by Melacha Shein Tzvich L'Gufa, a preparatory discussion that we weren't up to yet, but is that a lack of chiyuv because there isn't the right das, or is it an active ptur and you need something there to distract the malacha into a different place, which was relevant to the Trumas HaDeshen. The Trumas HaDeshen that the Magen Avraham quoted, that if you don't need either the offer or the whole, then you are chayiv. The Magen Avraham saying that's unbelievable, it should be a kal v'chomer, you should be pater. And we discussed a couple of different approaches. Jonathan's suggesting because of the malach shein tzvich l'gufa component, you need some positive goal to make it something else. We mentioned Rav Osner's approach, that it's the difference in form is significant, whether the Meiri talks about taking the dirt somewhere else as opposed to leaving the dirt here, which makes it just the Malacha Shein Tzvich L'Gufa, but not necessarily Mekalkel. And then we talked about the question of the different Malachos, about the different actions of Choresh, the Chofer and the Choretz, whether those are Avos or not. We saw the Rambam and the Ritva both saw them as Avos, but with different formulations. The Rambam, because of his broad understanding that anything that's within the same function is going to count, while the Ritva really just seeing it as the same thing. It doesn't get its own name because they weren't all in, because they were all in the Mishkan, but were just not all done part of the same process, so they don't get their own name, but there are all essentially different ways of saying Choresh, and it's a different understanding of what makes something into all and av. Then we saw in terms of toldos, the Rishalmi calls this a toldos, the Zeruah, by the way, calls this toldos. We saw that Rashi calls this a toldos, also Rashi and Vav Mideis. We talked a little bit about how this fits in with previous discussions of Rashi, what separates this form in a significant way that makes it a av, not an av, makes it a toldos rather than an av. And also the Meiri focusing on tools and focusing on what was done in Mishkan and not, a basic premise difference between the Meiri and the Ritva in terms of whether these other malachos were done in the Mishkan. And then we talked about this question of the question of Al Yidei Behema, that there was a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. Everyone agrees that if you use your cow, you use your ox to do Choresh, that you're Chayav Skila, but the Rambam sees that as a special drasha from the Aseres HaDibros. And the Ramban says, no, I don't need the drasha for that, because this is basically your action done through this tool. And then we saw some discussion about that, the Malachas Machshavas component, and the question of, if you take that approach, so how does that extend to machines? We see the Chazon Ish expanding that to machines as general, seen as your tool, and the Rav Tzvi Beis HaFrank not willing to accept that premise, and seeing a difference between plowing with an animal and plowing with a machine, which is much more indirect. Okay, so I hope everybody's doing all right. Tomorrow is a Parsha day. We'll also try to talk about Slichos a little bit because it's our last opportunity to do that before Slichos. And then Sunday we will come in Ragi-eyed and talk about Haleichos Ma'aseh, Zoreiah, and Choresh. So that was that one for today.